Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And Denise, we're happy to welcome again to Good to Grow, Master Gardener Vegetable Specialist Bill Hodge. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
Well, we have you here because you're going to be a part of the Summer Vegetable Gardening Workshop taking place next weekend at the Escarate Park Pavilion. It's going to be on March 29th between 9 a.m. to noon. And again, like the title says, it's going to be a workshop all about summer vegetable gardening. And Bill, you've been working on quite a number of different types of summer vegetables. And before the show, you were telling us about all these different types of corn. And when I think of corn, I just think of corn. It's just corn, and it grows, and it's on the cob, and it's delicious. But I never knew there were all these different varieties of corn.
Yeah, there are a lot of varieties out there. There's regular corn. There's corn for cows, feed corn. What we're looking at is some sweet corn, and we bought one regular sweet corn. We're buying one that says it's 20% sweeter, so we'll see whether that's really true or not. And then we have a couple other sweet corns that we're going to plant. We've never really planted corn in a large area to grow before. We've had individual master gardeners who have done it. And so this is going to be our first foray into this. And if it works, it takes a lot of space to grow corn because corn needs to be in a block so it can pollinate itself. Mm-hmm. And so you really need a lot of space. And also you don't get as much off a stand of corn. You may get three, if you're lucky, ears of corn off one stalk. So it takes a lot.
Yeah, and I think it's really good to look at corn because sometimes people want to put one long strip of corn because they say, oh, it grows vertically, it goes upright. But in essence, you know, that stuff that comes up on the top, that tassel, that's the pollen that's going to fertilize the silk and fertilize the cob that's further down in the plant. So like Bill says, if you have a small little short block, you know, 10 feet long, 4 or 5 feet wide, you keep that pollen in that same general vicinity so that your chances of fertilizing is going to go up. Because for every one little kernel on your cob, you have to fertilize each one silk. So that little hair that comes out at the end of the cob, that needs to get fertilized to just make just one of those little kernels.
Wow.
So it's a really big amount of pollen that you need. And if you have a whole long strip, you're just sending that pollen into the air and into, you know, somebody's allergy eyes.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's why you plant it in a big block. So all that pollen stays right in there. And it's like tomatoes. Tomatoes are pollinated by the wind also. So you want to keep all that there. Whereas squash, on the other hand, is pollinated by bees. So you want bees around to pollinate the flowers so that you get the fruit.
Well, let's talk about squash. There's so many different varieties of squash, and I know that you were talking about one that kind of looks like one of the old light bulbs that we're probably not going to be seeing anymore for too long.
Yeah, there's a new one out. I forget the exact name of it, but it's shaped like a light bulb. It's yellow in color, and you cook it just the same as you do any other squash. It's a summer-type squash on the lines of a crookneck or straight-neck squash that we plant. But we've never planted it before, so this year we're going to plant some and see how they do. If they do well and things, we may plant more of them next year. We're also going to go back. Last year we didn't plant any scallop squash. This year we're going to go back and plant scallop squash again because that's always a real popular one. We'll have zucchini, we'll have summer squash and things like that. In fact, we planted some summer squash yesterday because it was so warm. We're just going to see what happens with it. But it's been so warm and things that we're looking at temperatures. I mean, the whole concept of the garden is what's your last frost date. And a lot of your planting is really tied to what that last frost date is.
And ours is in April, isn't it?
If you're talking about a killing frost, a heavy frost, it's usually sometime in the last 2 weeks of March. A light frost that you could get could go to the end of April and stuff. Easter is probably the middle of April this year. And I remember not long after we moved here, it snowed on Easter in the middle of April.
Right.
So
it's very
true. So you kind of you have to watch that last frost date, because you'll read about a lot of things that go in the ground, and they say, like, we're going to plant potatoes this coming week. Well, it says plant them 3 weeks before the last frost. So we're kind of counting back, and we're going to plant our potatoes. We're counting on the last frost to be the middle of March.
Right. And I think it's really important, because you do get a lot of conflicting information as far as a frost date, because we're talking, okay, 32 degrees, but what can a plant withstand? What's the risk that you're going to take? A lot of times, you know, for the most part, these guys put out their tomato plants by the end of March. You know, starting in the March 20s, they start planting it for their summer crop. For us, it's really difficult. Our last freeze can be detrimental to a crop, but I think more so the biggest issue that we have is that it gets too hot too quick here. So that little window of time where those optimum temperatures, if you're waiting on what the last frost may or may not be, then at the end, you just may not have any tomatoes that summer. So I really think that if you're going to look at it at the end of March, it's going to be your safest bet to get your tomato plants in the ground.
Yeah, that's kind of the biggest question we get from people when we're talking to them and things about planting, whether it's at the home show, whether it's at the farmer's market or on our help desk, is it's July and I don't have any tomatoes.
Yeah.
When did you plant them? Well, I planted in the middle of May. Well, tomatoes don't do well when the temperature gets over 95 degrees during the day and over 75 degrees at night. And if you're in May, June, the temperatures are that. And so you'll have very few and very poor tomatoes.
And I think also the fault lies with maybe a lot of nurseries who are trying to get rid of their overstock of tomato seedlings, because, you know, you could walk to any grocery store even, and right outside the store, you'll still find, you know, tomatoes and other vegetable seedlings that are being sold, I think, way beyond the date that they should have already been in the ground.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we also have to look at planting squash or any kind of vining crops that you're going to directly sow into the ground. Those can actually be a little bit later, because you're concerned about the soil temperature at that time. So it may be really warm in the air, but that soil still needs a little time to heat up and be able to directly plant your cucumbers or squash. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about maybe space requirements for a vine, like a small little cucumber patch that you want to have?
Well, if you're going to plant cucumbers, they're a lot like squash in that they won't get as big a leaves, but they will put out runners that will go 6, 8, 10 feet. And so if you're looking for fruit, you always got to look at all those runners too. But usually in a 14-foot row, we'll leave about a 2-foot square around each one. If they run together, it's not a big deal, but you need enough space for them to get their sunlight and to grow and have room for their roots to spread out so they can produce fruit. So you need at least a 2-foot square around each of the plants to get optimal growth out of them. And for a squash plant, it's about the same. Squash plants get bigger leaves, and they'll keep the ground cooler that way. In fact, the Indians used to, Native Americans would plant corn, and then they plant pole beans next to it, and the pole beans would grow up the corn, and then they plant squash in there, and it'd keep the ground cool and help reduce the amount of evaporation from the soil.
Yeah.
So we kind of try, we don't plant the pole beans in the corn because we never really plant corn, but that is one of the big considerations with squash, is keeping the ground cool.
Yeah, those were the three sisters, what I've heard. And I've heard that the rotation of those three crops also kept the soil filled with nutrients as well from being depleted.
Yeah, because beans will put nitrogen back into the soil where the other two will take it out.
Right.
So does that spacing, say if you were planting a cucumber or maybe you're thinking of maybe starting a melon patch, does that sort of 2-foot spacing requirement apply to all those sort of vining vegetables?
Melons, you may want to go a little deeper. In melons, you usually want to build a little hill and put the seeds down in the hill. That gives them a rundown, and you put the water right in there. We had melon. We've had a melon patch, and we had watermelon in it, and we had cucumbers in it. But we planted them pretty close together. They were probably 3 feet around, and they grow together and everything. But it's all the plants are going to do that. And the only hard part comes is when you're looking for fruit, you got to move all the leaves around. When the plants finally died, we found 3 watermelons we hadn't found before. So, yeah, you plant them close together, but you don't worry about it a lot.
So what if you have just a small space for a garden? Are there any maybe summer vegetable crops that they should maybe stay away from just because of the spacing requirements? Or are there any that you would recommend?
I wouldn't stay away from any. I would change the direction they grow. Like cucumbers, a lot of times you can grow up. You can train them. We have a fence, a piece of chain link fence that we have, that we have trained cucumbers to grow up them. You can train cantaloupe to grow up. The thing you have to watch if you're growing something big is you have to support that once it gets growing and starts to get some size. Because if not, it's just going to break the whole plant and fall down.
What would you use for that?
What they recommend using is cut off a pair of pantyhose and put it down in the foot tie it up.
I don't know how popular pantyhose are in fashion.
You can buy some cheap ones at Walgreens, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can also use like bird netting, burlap also kind of works really well to support them. We do have a really great demonstration area at our vegetable demonstration garden where there's a vertical trellis where the cucumbers grow up and around almost like in an arbor shape coming off the raised bed. So that's a really good technique that people can use for small spaces to be able to train their vegetables to go up. And they do some really great Armenian cucumbers out there. Mm-hmm. And they did some muskmelon last year as well. And they had these, they almost look like little hammocks that the fruit kind of sits in, and it's kind of like, you know, just kind of supported, and it's not too rigid, but it allows that flexibility for that plant to grow, because ultimately you have gravity working against you all the time. And if you're doing your things right, that plant's getting bigger and bigger as the weeks progress.
Well, I still want to see a cantaloupe in a pair of pantyhose. And if I can find that image, I will put it on our website. Well, the Summer Vegetable Workshop and Plant Sale is going to be taking place next weekend, March the 29th, from 9 to noon at the Escarate Park Pavilion. Bill Hodge, our guest, will be one of the featured speakers talking about a lot of the summer vegetables we were talking about today. However, the deadline for registration is coming up here in just a few days on March the 25th. There's a $10 fee associated with the workshop, and there's also a seedling sale where you can take home some of the summer vegetables we were talking about on the show, and which you'll learn about on next weekend's gardening workshop. You can register for the workshop by calling 860-2515. That's 860-2515. And we also have more details available on the Good to Grow page at ktep.org. You can also listen to some of our past episodes, including last week's show that we did with Bill Hodge. Bill Hodge is a vegetable specialist with the El Paso Master Gardeners, and we want to thank you so much for coming on Good to Grow today.
Thank you. It's good being here.
I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And remember, a gardener's shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.